Gordon Carter is with WFMT in Chicago, and I think over the years I've learned more from the Chicago engineers than anybody else here, because they seem to be uniquely qualified and willing to share their knowledge on what they know and love. Gordon's no exception. Don gave me a little bio packet here about Gordon that talks about a little bit of his background, and it sounds like he's not a native Chicagoan, but stuck around for a long time. I was a little disappointed. I don't know who wrote these bios, but I think there was a better one in the current SBE Signal that talked about your adventures in an aluminum tower somewhere in...
Stainless steel.
That's even better. Heavier, but... So Gordon's had an interesting life, and would like to talk a little bit about troubleshooting investigation, not crime scene, although maybe in some cases it's the same thing. Taking a systematic approach to things is wonderful, and I hope you would mention what not to do also, which I think afflicts all of us. You get a call at 2 in the morning, and somebody says, the transmitter's off the air, and here's what's going on. Here's what I think. You drive to the transmitter, and by the time you get there, you've pretty much already solved the problem in your mind. But in nine cases out of ten, that's not the problem at all. So don't get caught in the trap that we all get caught in. So tell us about troubleshooting investigation and how you go about it. Gordon Carter.
Okay, can you all hear me? We're going to talk about troubleshooting, and I'm not going to tell you how to fix anything. If you want to know how to fix your transmitter, call your transmitter manufacturer. That's not my job today. But I'm going to tell you how to figure out what's wrong with your transmitter or your console or whatever else you may have. I'm sure you've all had a situation and you wanted to put a sign on the equipment that goes something like this. Now, as Steve mentioned, I'm not originally from the Chicago area. I grew up in southeastern Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania Dutch country. That'd make perfect sense there. That's the way they talk, really. Even today, some of the old-timers still talk like that. But what we're trying to do here is deal with the aftermath of this. Why are we troubleshooting? Well, sooner or later, you got to troubleshoot something. It might be your car, might be something in your radio station. As engineers, we're called on to troubleshoot. That's part of the job description in most cases. Admittedly, there are some people that are engineers that have kind of moved up the ranks into administration. They still have to troubleshoot sooner or later. Something. An organized approach to troubleshooting is going to save you vast amounts of time, money, and mistakes. Like Steve said, you're driving and you get there and, oh my, everything that you thought was wrong isn't. And everything that you thought was right also isn't. So, what do we do? First step, this is a four-step approach. We're going to be real quick here. Observe. And I've got to say, this is the most important step. If you don't do this well, the rest of it's going to fall apart. You get a complaint that something doesn't work. First thing you do, don't open it up. Just go and look. Does it really doing what the guy said it's doing? Or is it doing something else and he's just seeing what he wants to see? I've run across this a lot of times where you have to really find out that what they think they're seeing isn't what's really happening. Make sure it's exactly the way they report. Look for operator errors, pilot error. Big. I don't know how many times I've been called into a control room. Such and such all of a sudden isn't working. I walk in, I push a button that they had pushed by mistake, and everything's happy again. Make sure that what they're seeing is the primary symptoms. And by the way, Steve mentioned, this is a lot like, if you've ever watched the CSI programs, they talk about a primary crime scene and a secondary crime scene. We're looking for the primary symptoms here. You make sure that what you're seeing is the primary. You know, that puff of smoke isn't necessarily the primary symptom. That's just a telltale. It might guide you to where the primary symptom is. Use the front panel controls. Remember, we haven't opened anything yet. We're still just observing. Go through, see if the controls all work the way they're supposed to. A lot of times that'll point you in the right direction. I can remember one time this goes back a number of years. Someone brought me a radio. It says, I can't, the station is fuzzy on this radio. And I listened to it, and it sounded like it was detuned a little bit. So I reached over and tried to brush up the tuning, old analog tuner. Knob kept turning. Nothing happened. Dial cord was broken. Tell you a lot just from using the front panel controls. Look for the obvious problems. A lot of times your problems are a lot more obvious than you think they should be. Abuse. It's pretty obvious when you walk in and you see this puddle under a piece of equipment that kind of looks like slightly used coffee. And you realize that that came through the equipment. It's a good idea that there might be something wrong there. Evidence of tampering. That goes back to that first slide. We have a guy at our station. He works the overnight shift. And he is really, really good at it. He's OCD. This is nothing derogatory to him, it's just the way he is. All of the little push buttons, the square push buttons on the console, must be perfectly level. So he's always there twisting them a little bit to get them level. Well, every now and then I come in and I get a report, the button's loose. And what happened was he broke the retaining ring inside by turning it too far. I'm not going to change him. This is just the way the man is. Just keep a supply of extra parts. But that's unintentional abuse. Sometimes you get intentional abuse, too. You get a jock that... maybe he just had got a breakup call from his girlfriend. So he puts his fist through the console, you know. I by the way, nothing against any consoles out there. I know some console manufacturers are advertising you can shoot it and you can stand on it. The reality is, I've never seen anything that was 100% jock-proof. A little more on the observing. Now we're going to dig a little deeper. You've already looked at what's happening. Now we look at the documentation. You learn the logical path of the signal through your system. This is a big one, and Examine troubleshooting tips in the manual and on the website. Manuals, a lot of times, especially nowadays, I'm sorry, manufacturers, you need to give us more troubleshooting tips. Because the equipment nowadays is so high, really, it's high-tech equipment. Finding your way around it requires a lot of good information. And a lot of times the manuals are a little skimpy on that. Websites. Google is your friend in this case. Put in a few keywords. I have found, I don't know how many times, solutions to problems, very obscure problems, by going to a website. Go to the manufacturer's website. There are all kinds of places. Talk to your buddies. You can talk to the guys, the engineers in Chicago. There are certain ones I call. If I have this kind of problem, I'll call this guy. If I have that kind of problem, I'll call him. Because they know, they probably have already encountered it. And then they usually come back to me and say, boy, you really come up with the odd problems. Well, that's life. Okay, we've observed. We've found everything we can by looking and just using what's readily available. Now we're going to open the equipment. Isolate it from other pieces of equipment. Make sure that that what you're seeing is not coming in bad. Garbage in, garbage out. Make sure that it's really happening within that one piece of equipment. More and more we have to troubleshoot computers and software. Make sure there's no other programs running. I don't know how many times I've seen cases where you've got a program running in the background and it's destroying what you're trying to do because the two programs don't like to live with each other, even though the computer manufacturer, the software manufacturers all say, oh no, this shouldn't happen. We all know better. Remove the covers. If it has covers. I mean, let's face it, some pieces of equipment, you just can't get into them. Divide the logical path in half. When I was talking to Steve earlier, you cut it in half. Okay, we know it's good here and it's bad here. Cut it in half. Okay, is the first half still good? Okay, we've eliminated 50% right there. Now we work on this half. Keeps cutting it in half. If you've ever heard the story of the little boy who had a penny and a checkerboard. You've heard this one? One penny on the first square. Two pennies on the second square, four pennies on the third, eight. Keep doubling on each square. By the time you get to 64 squares, I'm not even sure that the federal government has enough money to cover it. It builds up that quickly. Well, this is just the opposite. We're cutting it in half. So we can reduce the number of possibilities very quickly. Now we're going to go to step three. I told you there was only four steps. Pursue. Repeat those steps that we just did. The first two. You may have to repeat a few times. Because as you open it up and look, oh, okay, we've gotten to this point. Now I have to do some more observing before I can proceed. Keep repeating. You might have to dig deeper, find more information. And just keep going. Use your test equipment. That's part of the observing process, but not quite. You know, I put it in the pursue because we've done the observing, we've done the digging into the equipment, the opening. Now we're going to pursue. Get out your test equipment. Big one. Don't rely on hunches. How many of you said, oh yeah, I've seen this before. It's such and such. And you're completely off base. You just wasted that much time playing a hunch when you could have been looking to find the real cause. To me, this is the hardest part right there. Because as you've been doing this for years and years and years and years, sometimes you think you know your equipment real well. Well, I've done this. I've gotten calls on broken equipment. I grab a handful of parts that I think are the problem. I mean, 99% of the time, these are the problems. I get there, that isn't the problem. Ask your friends for help. Stay focused. This is hard, especially when your transmitter's off the air and your general manager is calling you every 5 minutes saying, when are we going to get back on the air? A few weeks ago, I saw a thing on one of the listservs. Guy was telling a story when he was working at some station. They had a day transmitter and a night transmitter. Night transmitter at lower power. The day transmitter failed, so they were on night. Well, general manager was really feeling this, and he's saying, when are we going to get the day transmitter back on? I kept calling him every 10 minutes. Finally, the engineer said, well, it's going to take 4 days to get this working. 4 days? Why? Because I got this guy that keeps calling me every 10 minutes and asking me how long it's going to be till it's going to be fixed. That ended the phone calls. An hour later, the transmitter was back on the air. And by the way, the guy kept his job. And it gained the respect of his general manager. Finally, last step, solve your problem. Find it, correct it. This is a big one. Verify that it's working correctly after you think you fixed it. A lot of times you get to this point and you find you have to go all the way back to the beginning and start over again because there's a multiplicity of problems. Sometimes you walk in and you find this burned resistor, a big hole in the circuit board. It becomes pretty obvious that the problem is there. You fix all of that, and you realize that, well, that burned resistor, when on its way out the door, took out half the solid state devices in the whatever it is you're working on. Now you've got to go back, find out what's what. Repeat as needed. Remember, the goal of troubleshooting is to return the item with a problem to normal operation. And I think it goes without saying, as quickly as reasonably possible. Okay, we're going to just go through. Observe, open, pursue, and solve. Oops! Now my wife is always telling me, come up with strange things to help you remember. When my kids were in school, she gave them all kinds of weird things to remember the months of the year, the days of the week. There's something with your fingers to determine how many days there are in each month. I don't know. I don't know where she comes up with it. This one is mine. Oops. But if you remember that, when someone comes to you and says, kind of sheepishly, I kind of have a problem. Oops. Well, there you know. That now you've got the key to solving your problem. Okay, that's it. If you've any questions. That was easy. Yes, sir. Hang on. That speaker will get you every time.
One of the things that I noticed in the bio that you didn't talk about that's sort of related is that you, and I heard you mention it yesterday, you've got your feet in both the public broadcasting and the commercial broadcasting world. You're in a unique position. What's your observation on how public versus commercial broadcast engineers solve these kind of problems? Do they take it? My suspicion is it's different. I don't know if it's better or worse, but I'd like to hear what you think.
I think there's a slightly different demographic, I think, to public radio engineers versus commercial. I think most of the people in this room would say you're commercial. Any public radio people in here? Couple. Yeah, you, I know. I think in public radio, and to some extent, the public radio engineers actually are a little more on the cutting edge of the technology than the commercial. Part of this has to do, and there was a question raised in the Q&A session last night about making money. Well, the reality is that a lot of times the public radio engineers, public radio stations, don't have that charge. Their job is not to make money, but to fulfill a mission statement. And as long as they can get the donations to cover it, they have a lot of flexibility. The HD radio, NTIA gave lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of grants for stations to upgrade to HD. That was all public. And I would say you go to the Public Radio Engineering Conference, which is usually about 200 to 300 people. And out of that group, about 75% to 80% have had HD on the air for several years now. And how many of you have HD radio? Yeah, this is about what I figured, about half here. So you can see there's a slightly different demographic in that respect. The other thing with public public radio engineers. Believe it or not, I think there's a broader range. Public radio seems to be attracting a little better than commercial radio, new blood. And I get this from just looking at the... there's a listserv called PubTech, Public Radio Technical. And people are calling in with questions that, quite frankly, I'd venture a guess, everyone in this room would know the answer to off the top of their head and say, what in the world is this guy doing in engineering? And then you dig a little deeper, you find the guy's 21 years old and he's learned everything he knew about from a computer. He got kind of thrust into it. He's trying to do his best, but he doesn't, you know. So education is a big part of it. The other extreme, the public radio engineers that are my age and in that realm, quite frankly, for radio, are some of the best engineers around. And nothing against some of the people that I know that are working in the commercial world, but you know, there's a very broad range there. Regarding troubleshooting skills, it's all over the map. This process that I gave is not something that you can use this as a guideline, but it's something that needs to be practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced until it becomes a part of you. Like I say, my problem, I jump to conclusions way too quickly. But if you don't, you can save yourself a lot of time. Does that answer your question?
Gord, one thing you mentioned, jumping to conclusions. I've run across this thing, though, some machines, I've run into like certain tape machines. You have an issue, you look at the output, there's a couple places that are common problems. You check those first, just to eliminate them before, you know.
Right.
So jumping to conclusions, sometimes knowing that there's this issue, go for it first, see if that's it, because it's a simple fix, and if not, then you can go on.
Your experience and knowledge are a big plus and certainly will assist in this process. But sometimes it can get you into trouble. I mean, like you say, at one time I had a stable of 35 Studer tape recorders. And there were only two models there. I knew those things inside out and backwards. And if someone came to me and said such and such was happening, I'd give you a 95% chance that there was a certain transistor that was burned out. Or a spring that there was a... on one of them, there was a spring that kept... It had a long hooked end on it, and the hook kept breaking off. And that caused all kinds of weird problems. But sometimes that's not the problem. And you don't want to get stuck and bogged down in those assumptions.
The other thing is especially, you know, radio with the digital, you're going to be doing more and more. Television, we can't fix stuff. It's board exchange now. And I've found that sometimes just to isolate the board so you know which board to send in, you can spend more time just troubleshooting something with just a few boards because the signal is going back and forth between them.
Right.
Then you can...
You have to know when to stop, too. I didn't put that in here, but it's true. Let me give you a real good example. Switching type power supplies. How many of you have ever tried to repair a switching type power supply? How many of you have been successful with it without shotgunning every cap in it? Exactly. The reality is, know your limits. Know when, you've got this board with, who knows how many, you start off, it's a multi-layer circuit board. It's got surface mount components on it. You don't have the tooling. You know very well that if you try to remove something, you're going to destroy the board anyway. It's time to say, okay, here is the problem, and the solution is to replace the board. You can't always replace the component. And I found with older engineers, this is one of the hardest things to get through to them, is you can't replace the component every time. Most of the people in this room have come from, here is a capacitor. I can hold it in my hand. I can see it. I can feel it. I can get shocked from it. Nowadays, you can take 100 capacitors, and it looks like a handful of dirt. And I can't read any markings on it. Rich.
Well, one thing I'd add, Gordon, is when you're troubleshooting, don't cause more trouble. Good. It's easy to break things while you're in there. And the focus part, when you're in the high voltage supply of the transmitter, turn off the cell phone.
Yep.
Unplug the wall phone. You need to focus, because I know all of us have run in and out of high voltage supplies, and that third time we look over, oop, the wall disconnect didn't get pulled.
Yeah, focus is so important, especially when you're around lethal voltages. Pardon?
Have a safety person.
Yeah. Okay, Steve?